And I think it was because there were two RAF guys as passengers, and they'd obviously read the evacuation sign on the windows and all the rest of it, and they pushed out windows, fortunately, on the right-hand side. A rush of water, I thought, you know, going to settle right down, and I'm afraid instinct took over. I opened the bow door, and two or three passengers followed me. The rest, apart from one, as far as I know, went out with the RAF guys. As I went out, I banged my head, and I was helped onto the upturned craft, if I recall correctly, and then I helped the two or three or four passengers up, and the rest were there. Then I got them all in the middle, and wondered what to do. I was then concerned about number four boy, because the wind effect had gone. We were in the grip of the ebb flow out of Portsmouth, and I thought we were going to hit number four. Meanwhile, there was a banging from down below, and, you know, submarine type of thing. And so I banged back, because obviously somebody hadn't made it out. We're getting closer to number four boy, and I thought, well, I better try and secure to that boy. So I went down to try and get the anchor free and be able to use the line to maybe attach to number four boy. Absolutely verboten under Trinity House rules. Then and I noticed a guy floating on his back, swimming away. Then Nick Rose, who I happen to know, was driving the Trinity House pilot launch, and he came alongside and took some passengers off. And then a chopper came. Oh, and I remember seeing the Coast Guard red flare, so I knew that, you know, the South Sea Terminal staff obviously saw what happened, plus a red flare, presumably from an authority. So I was happy that the plight was known about. Then the helicopter came and took, I don't know how many off, a few, Wessex helicopter. And I'm told there was a second helicopter came over. I don't remember that, but I do remember asking the winchman, RAF winchman, to if I could have a life jacket, because, you know, I yelled out, put on your life jackets three times, but nobody had enough time to do that, or even find them, probably, and I certainly didn't. So then there was the poor person trapped underneath, and I asked them to get divers, because I wasn't trained as a diver, and I certainly wasn't brave enough to, you know, duck dive and take a chance, because, you know, I probably wouldn't be here now. So that was in hand, and then an Admiralty tug, I think it was an Admiralty tug, was passing by, and I wanted to get the craft into Portsmouth Harbour, because that was relatively calm. You know, otherwise there was nothing else sensible to do. And they threw me, oh no, there was a butcher's boat, butcher's workboat, and I think they threw a line as well, and but the line parted. Then this tug was there. I got a line, quite a thick sort of 3-inch, 4-inch hawser on the end of a heeling line, and I made that fast to one of the forward feet of the hovercraft, because it had, I think, 6 feet, which it landed on hard surface. And the tug put on power, and of course, I hadn't worked that out. We just took a dive, and I was nearly washed off the craft. And I think that probably put an end to the poor person underneath. I had to cast off the hawser, because, you know, we weren't going to get anywhere. It would have just gone right down. Then an inflatable came out, with Navy divers. And they went over, and then they shook. One guy went, scuba diver, and then he came up and shook his head. So there was not much else I could do. And they I remember them asking me, what do you want to do? And I was very, very cold by then, and I said, well, I'd go ashore. I regret that decision, because as soon as a master goes ashore, he loses control of the situation, and there's no way I'd allowed them to beach. Subsequently, they beached the craft at Southsea.